great. How's everybody? Good, good, good. Now, as your father probably told you, my name is Matt Foley, and I am a motivational speaker. Now, let's get started by letting me give you a little bit of a scenario of what my life is all about. First off, I am 35 years old, I am divorced, and I live in a van down by the river. Now, you kids are probably saying to yourselves, hey, I'm going to go out and I'm going to get the world by the tail and wrap it around and pull it down and put it in my pocket. Well, I'm here to tell you that you're probably going to find out as you go out there that you're not going to amount to jack squat. You're going to end up eating a steady diet of government cheese and living in a van down by the river. Now, young man, what do you want to do with your life?
Actually, Matt, I kind of want to be a writer.
Well, la-dee frickin' da! We got ourselves a writer here! Hey, Dad, I can't see real good. Is that Bill Shakespeare over there?
Huh? Well, actually, Matt, Ellen and I have encouraged Brian in his writing.
Dad, I wish you could just shut your big yapper!
Now, I wonder, Brian, from what I've heard, you're using your paper not for writing, but for rolling doobies. You're gonna be doing a lot of doobie rolling when you're living in a van down by the river.
Pre-recorded live from Pennsylvania and Nebraska, U.S. of A. It's the Bob and Elvis Show.
Right on!
With Bob Seska and Elvis Dingledean. The following podcast contains harsh language, nudity, graphic violence, adult situations, and a healthy obsession with empirical reality. The Bob and Elvis Show.
I raised my cup of coffee to the late, great Chris Farley.
And the late, great Phil Hartman.
Yeah, God. Oh, my God, that's right. It's so funny and yet so seriously tragic all at once. Good Lord. But the both of those guys within, like, what, like a year?
Yeah, it was right on top of each other. That was a terrible way for Phil Hartman to go. That was tragic.
You know, I mean, I could play that Matt Foley clip at the top of every single damn show.
It's one of my favorite Saturday Night Live bits. And it misses a great deal audio-wise because of Spade's reaction. I mean, he's just trying not to absolutely fall apart.
Right, and that's a good half of it. I mean, it ends with Farley leaping down and crushing the coffee table. And
yeah, falling out the window.
Falling out the window, right.
Yeah. Farley was peerless.
Of course, that's also a very specific reference to Phil Davison, that guy who, you know, we really got to start doing this show like every day because we miss out.
It's just too much.
Right. I mean, it, we finished the show last Thursday, and within 24 hours, we've got this incredible bit of tape. I mean, it's literally like the funniest goddamn thing I've heard.
Never seen anything like it. I don't know what that guy's deal was, but it just obviously off his meds or something. His wife beats him up, or I don't know.
I mean, he's having a complete nervous breakdown, or at least, you know, I think there's part of it here where he believes he's being like, I don't know, like Glenn Beck, like emphatic, and he's like, he's playing along with the whole like angry teabagger thing.
Yeah, but you don't do that when you're laying out your credentials. When you're not an MBA in public speaking. It's like Jesus Christ, dude.
Well, if you don't know what we're talking about, here's part of the clip.
In terms of elections across Stark County, I have represented our party twice on the county ballot, in both the primary and the general elections. When I ran for Stark County Clerk of Courts in 1996. And Stark County Commissioner in 2000, and I will not apologize for my tone tonight. I have been a Republican in times good, and I have been a Republican in times bad.
And I've been rolling doobies
in a van down by the river.
Right.
God damn.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that's Phil Davis.
Just insane.
I mean, and it's for, like, Stark County Treasurer.
Yeah, he's not even running for, you know, national office or even really local, you know, any legislative thing. It's so he can, you know, count the pennies coming into the Stark County Treasury there.
So it's kind of like, you know, like one of my favorite movies, Waiting for Guffman. It's like those guys just blowing this whole show out of proportion. Like it's this huge thing and it's nothing but this small town sesquicentennial or whatever it is. And they're putting on this show. And this guy is the same thing. He's just, he's putting on this huge show for just this nothing position.
But look what it got him. It got him probably exactly what he wanted.
This guy.
National attention.
That's right. He's going to be Secretary of State if Sarah Palin is elected in 2 years.
Oh, he was priceless.
Phil Davison.
But yeah, we do need to do more shows because every day something happens. I'm like, oh, I need to talk about that.
Yeah, yeah.
But I can't. Only got a one-day show.
Well, see, that's why we need more more sponsors.
Ding.
We get more sponsors. We get to do more shows and take more time doing those shows because we do this on our own time, which is fine because it's incredibly fun and all that stuff. But
yeah, we do it anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey.
I mean, we would just sit around and talk about this for an hour anyway, so might as well.
That's right. We'd just be walking down the street holding hands and just gabbing. it's the Bob and Elvis Show. Bob Seska here in Pennsylvania. Elvis Dingledean there in Nebraska. I didn't really intend to talk about this, but this happened right before we went on the show today. Big, big Harry Reid fail. Did you see this?
No. What'd he do now?
Holy crap. So we had the situation in Delaware, which we're going to talk about with Christine O'Donnell and the Democratic nominee, Chris Coons, running against her. And then all of the wingnut fighting that's happening surrounding it with Karl Rove somehow in the center of it. But before we get to that, essentially the polls show Chris Coons with this enormous advantage. It's either 20 points or 15 points. I mean, it's this huge thing. Delaware is a dark blue state. They're going to elect a Democrat, most likely. Or they would have elected Mike Castle, but only because Mike Castle is a very, very moderate Republican.
Very moderate, yeah.
And he's legendary in Delaware.
Yeah.
So
he's.
But I mean, we have this candidate, Chris Coons, who, you know, we can get this seat. I mean, we can have this seat that we weren't going to have, at least for the Democratic caucus. Now, here's the fail. Harry Reid, in a statement, this is just an off-the-cuff thing to reporters. He says, quote,
I'm reading it now.
I'm going to be very honest with you. Chris Coons, everybody knows him in the Democratic caucus. He's my pet. He's my favorite candidate. Oh. Holy crap. Yeah.
Good one, Harry. He's my pet. He's now, my shades pet. Of another Chris Farley scene where he's sitting in the diner with Tommy Boy, and he's loving on that roll. It's my pet. I love my pet. And then again!
That's right. Well, see, I mean, I'm thinking, like, what is he, like, some sort of, like, hairless supervillain or something? Like, he's like Mr. Burns from The Simpsons. Like, my pet.
My pet.
Doctor, like, tapping his fingers together in front of his face and... Yeah. You know.
Oh, that's awful.
I call this my spruce goose. Get in, Smithers. But sir, that's...
Kleenex boxes on his feet.
That's right. But sir, that's just a model. I said get in. Great, great Mr. Burns.
Whatever you say, sir.
Whatever you say. But it's just a model. And he pulls out a revolver. Get in.
It's now this gives them the fodder because I never really understand the whole on Twitter and everywhere else when they unify, when they make it the Reid Pelosi Obama agenda, as if those three are ever coalesced on anything.
That's
right. It's like, what, as a Democrat, I know that these three people just don't walk a straight line. Why don't you people know this? But now he's going to go out and say this and it'll be, oh, the Harry Reid agenda. And he's his pet. That's not going to help. That's probably cost Coons a couple of points.
Well, yeah, because it's going to be in every damn Christine O'Donnell commercial between now and November 2nd. It's going to be Harry Reid saying,
yes, he's my pet. Excellent. He's my favorite.
Precious.
My precious. my pet, my precious.
Oh, that's a pretty good Gollum impression.
But this is going to be really, really entertaining to watch. And I think the most entertaining thing from the last couple of days has been this huge fracas happening surrounding Karl Rove, where Rove is Rove basically called Christine O'Donnell the night before the election, called Christine O'Donnell kind of nutty, and was just calling into question all of her credentials. And this was on the Hannity show.
Yeah, I mean, even Hannity was sort of aghast at it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Hannity could barely hold back the tears. I mean, someone was like stepping on his dog or something. I mean, that's what it was like. So, you know, but now the entire wingnut right has kind of gone after Karl Rove, which if the Republican Party has moved so far right that Rove is on the left, that should give you a good indication as to how far right the Republicans are at this point.
Yeah. I mean, when you've got Sarah Palin going after Rove and it, absolutely, and all Rove, it wasn't even that scathing an attack on. I mean, O'Donnell is out of her mind insane. I mean, she's just nuts.
Yeah.
And he's just trying to speak a little, you know, he's just trying to just a little bit moderate. And for Rove, I mean, Rove, I don't think is an ideological creature, really. He's just pure politics. He doesn't give a shit. Whichever way the wind blows, he's just the ultimate opportunist.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's not steeped in deep ideology. He's a cynic. You know, the way the Bush campaign played the religious right in both elections, you know, it's not like he cleaves to a serious ideology. So it's, you know, but what goes around comes around. He's getting roved and we're all delighted and clapping our hands and popping popcorn.
Well, Rove is, I mean, you know what Rove is, right? I mean, Rove's a troll. I mean, what Rove has been doing, and this is why I haven't been paying much attention to Rove. I know it's very easy. It's, oh, look what Karl Rove said today. But what he's been doing since the election, and it's been very and transparently clear that this has been his MO since the election, is to just paybacks. So what he's doing is he's recycling all of the things that we said about George W. Bush for 8 years, and he's just saying those things about Barack Obama. So now we're kind of going, what are you saying that? That's crazy. But it's just, he's just trolling for that reaction. He just wants to incite. And, you know, I mean, he's basically like, you know, one of these douchebags who shows up in the Huffington Post comments just to, you know, rile up the crowd. And so, I mean, it's not really worth paying attention to Rove until now. And, you know, like, so now everyone is just piling on top of him. I mean, here's like Michelle Malkin says, Rove came across as an effete sore loser.
Effete?
Yeah.
Nice.
Instead of the supposedly brilliant and grounded GOP strategist that he's supposed to be. I mean, we're talking about Christine O'Donnell here. I mean,
What are they defending exactly?
That's right.
I mean, what is of substance? I mean, you can defend the win. I mean, that's something, I guess. But from a candidate perspective, her only credentials are that she's, I mean, she's just a professional candidate for Senate. That's all she does.
Yeah.
And apparently, if you believe her ex-campaign manager or somebody that used to work on her staff, she does that for a living. Like, she takes campaign contributions and lives on them.
Yeah, uses them for rent.
Which is, against the law.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Pretty sure that's against the law.
Well, yeah, I mean, she's got a lot of financial problems, which I don't begrudge her for that. I mean, you know, they were talking about, I mean, Rove is going off about something about a home foreclosure. I mean, you know, over 300,000 Americans had their homes foreclosed upon last month. I don't think that's really an issue. But when she was caught, like, absolutely red-handed lying by a conservative radio talk show host where...
Yeah, that Richard Dreyfuss guy.
Yeah, where he was, you know, he asked her about the statement that she had made in which she said that she won, I think, two counties or something in Delaware when she ran against Joe Biden. And as you...
One she had lost and one she had tied.
Right. Yeah, and he played back the clip of hers, and she denied saying that, and then he had the clip of her saying exactly that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and
I don't understand the whole thing. She's got this thing about how she had to pay off her college, her student loans before they would give her a diploma. That's not normally how it works.
Yeah.
As far as I understand college loans, they don't usually hold your diploma hostage. The whole point of a – I mean, I know people in their 30s and 40s still paying off student loans, but they've got the diploma. That's the whole point.
Yeah, it wasn't a student loan, though. I believe she was trying to pay the tuition out of pocket somehow. And because there wasn't, I mean, usually if there's a loan there, the loan actually then gets paid and sluiced right over into the university.
Right.
And so there's no payment.
I've never heard of the educational facility holding a diploma ransom for, yeah. I mean, you either took the classes and passed the courses or you didn't. I mean,
right.
I don't get the financial aspect of it.
Well, they were, I mean, I think it was Dickinson. I mean, they claimed that she stiffed them for the bill, which indicates to me that there were no loans. Either she ran out of loan money, she couldn't get any loans, or she had bad credit, or she could some circumstance or another that she couldn't actually pay the tuition, be it out of pocket or with loans. So they said, well, fine, we're not going to give you a diploma. And in fact, she says that when she went up and got her diploma, instead of getting an actual certificate, you know, as she's walking across in her cap and gown, they handed her a bill from the bursar's office.
I hope that's true. That's a great story.
It is. It really is. But
that
would
be awesome.
I mean, that's not really the big issue. I mean, it's why she's unelectable. I think she's unelectable because she's an empty suit and she's a liar. I mean, it was a flagrant on that conservative talk show host. I wish I don't have the clip here handy, but it's long. It's like a 12-minute extended slow motion train wreck where this guy, and it's a right wing talk show host. It's not some it's not like Mike Malloy is trapping her. It's
no, she wouldn't go on something like that. And he had endorsed her in past races. And
yeah.
He just ate her lunch.
Well, I mean, what this is doing is this is sort of underscoring the serious Republicans and then the effing morons, the idiots who are just screechers.
Yeah.
So you have now, I mean, right in the middle of all of this fight with Rove is adenoidal Mark Levin.
Ugh.
Who, I'm not even going to do my Mark Levin voice because it's just so I don't know how do these guys get radio jobs? I mean, you at least have to
Who would listen to him?
I swear
to God, he sounds like an audio version of a migraine headache.
He really, absolutely. That's exactly right. He is. And remarkably, I'm just obsessed with things like this. I look at iTunes all the time in the news and podcast section or the news and politics section just to see, how we're doing. And it's Mark Levin is consistently the top seven of the top 10 individual show podcasts.
I don't know who could listen to that. I mean, not just for the content. I understand the content, but that voice is just it's just not a voice for radio.
And that's just when he's talking.
Yeah. When he gets on a rant, he's absolutely hysterical.
He starts screeching and I mean, like Keith Olbermann does like a Mickey Mouse voice for Levin, but I don't think that's accurate.
No.
It's more like he had his nose removed or something. And I mean, it's just that's just a nitpicky thing about Levin. I mean, I don't know how anyone could stand to listen to that for 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. It's staggering.
But I mean, some good news. Levin and D'Souza and some of these guys are starting to be marginalized even by the right, by the establishment right.
Yeah.
The Weekly Standard and those guys, they're going after these guys really because their histrionics are beyond the pale at this point, and they're really starting to get taken to task.
Yeah.
So I mean, hopefully we've seen soon to have seen the last of D'Souza as a. Why anybody would take that clown shoe seriously.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, even previous stalwarts like D'Souza and Levin are being taken to task by some pretty serious right-wing media. So we may be seeing the end of their shriekery or their relevance.
Yeah, so, I mean, Levin actually said that Rove is declaring war against the Tea Party movement and conservatives. This is such – I think this is a watershed moment. I believe for the Republicans, it is showing this dividing line. And what I found remarkable, I wrote about this a little bit in the Huffington Post yesterday, is the elephant in the room in all of this is Sarah Palin, because in all of this criticism of Christine O'Donnell, no one is bothering to mention the fact that there would be no Christine O'Donnell if it was not for Sarah Palin. Sarah Palin leapfrogged Christine O'Donnell over Mike Castle, over this, you know, this 20-minute train wreck on that radio show where she's just one giant step into a pile of shit after another without ever being able to extricate herself. And it was Sarah Palin who was able to overcome all of this stuff to defeat like a legacy politician in Delaware, very small, very blue state. That is something to kind of behold.
It really is. Yeah. And, you know, I'm all again, so I'll say it week after week, I'm all for it. I can't wait for the generals for these, because the independents, I just don't think anybody that matters is paying attention to the general yet. And it's just going to be a real wake up call for these Tea Party idiots. These, I mean, these just absolute morons that they're electing in these primaries. It's just going to be a rout.
Yeah.
And if it's not, you know, then what we get is a couple of years for the Tea Party to figure out that once you go to Washington, there's no difference between these "we the people," you know, mouthpieces and any other politician. I mean, there's no, I don't know what they're railing against when they, you know, when they rail against against government in general and politicians in specific. It's all "we the people." Everybody was elected.
Yeah.
So, you know, go to Washington, become part of the K Street lunch crowd. You can't tell me that O'Donnell wouldn't be starstruck and dazzled by K Street day one. Somebody that's taking campaign contributions and, you know, buying groceries with them is certainly not going to stand up against the K Street apparatus.
Yeah.
So, you know, more power to them. Go be as effectual as you can possibly be. You know, running against everything you say you're against is ridiculous.
Right. Well, I, you know what, there's something that that came up yesterday I want to get to, but right after this.
Sponsor.
Yeah, today's show brought to you by Bubble Genius and Pomegranate Journeys. First, Bubble Genius. Pure products, pure genius, Bubble Genius. That's at bubblegenius.etsy.com. They have they sent me another commercial this week. Very funny stuff. Not as scintillating as last week's Talking Gonads, but I was really hoping. Yeah, I get this. Bubble Genius people sent me a commercial this week, and it was labeled pirates. So I was thinking, oh, a pirate with talking nards is what we'll hear. But
it's the new movie by Jerry Bruckheimer, but
that's right. Pirates of the Talking Nards.
Four.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Pirates of the Caribbean 4, the Talking Nards. The Curse of the Talking Nard. This Sunday is actually Talk Like a Pirate Day, believe it or not. I mean, this is like a thing. It's like a national thing. You go around on Sunday and you talk like a pirate. And the folks at Bubble Genius put together this special commercial for a promotion they're running this weekend for Talk Like a Pirate Day. Here we go.
What be this treasure I see with my spyglass?
Treasure.
Soapy Jones' locker. I knew it was more than a myth.
Soap?
Aye, Polly, soap, but the most sought-after soap in all the land. I'll have no more stinking shipmates once I hand out a pirate bar to each of them.
Bubble Genius?
You said it, Polly.
Get some piratitude with Bubble Genius. 25% off our pirate-themed soap all weekend in honor of Talk Like a Pirate Day on Sunday the 19th.
That's right.
BubbleGenius.com.
So there you go, right? So, I mean, I thought there for a second, because I heard the high-pitched sort of parrot voice, I thought that was the pirates talking nards.
Well, they're interchangeable.
But, you know, no such luck. So, yeah, that's right. Head over to Bubble Genius this weekend for 25% off in honor of Talk Like a Pirate Day on Sunday. Also, enter promo code Bob and Elvis, BobAndElvis, and get 15% off your entire order. Pure products, pure genius. It's Bubble Genius. And Pomegranate Journeys. I discovered last week that I absolutely just mispronounced just a whole variety of shit.
Yep.
And but I mean, and I so wholeheartedly apologize, because Pomegranate Journeys is just they're like dream tours. It's literally like the best parts of Europe, France, Italy. Bicycles, wine, food.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I'd be terrified to sit on one of those bikes. They got pictures of those bikes. I know those bikes would be like your wet dream. Like you wouldn't be able to. You just want to make love to that bike because it's got all this shit on it. But I would just be terrified. There's nothing sadder than just a big, sloppy, fat guy on a really sleek, cool bike, right? The bike would just see me coming and flee. It would be terrified.
Well, they have. I mean, they specialize in Kuwata carbon road bikes for roadies like me.
Yeah.
But I would actually try to bring my own bike.
Really?
Yeah. Why not?
Nerd.
I fear change.
I'm not traveling with you through in Italian airports with you lugging a bicycle around.
Pomegranate Journeys also has hybrid bikes though for beginners. So very, very comfortable bikes. You sit upright and ride along in comfort. Pre-programmed GPS units on every bike. Wow. You will not get lost. And one of their specialties is designing custom trips for private groups. You can customize the dates, location, activities, difficulty level, as well as the budget. And the organizer actually travels for free with 12 or more people on the trip. For example, a group with a specific interest in wine could organize a custom trip with casual riding and lots of wine tours and tastings, perhaps some cooking lessons in Tuscany. No problem.
I wonder what the insurance premium is on a tour where you're taking a bunch of Americans around to wine tastings and using bicycles at the same time.
That's right. Pomegranate Journeys at pomegranate.travel. Also, check them out on Twitter at Planet Palm and on Facebook at Pomegranate Journeys.
Shove Bob and Elvis into your pants and haul them around with you wherever you go. Subscribe to the Bob and Elvis Show in the podcast section on iTunes.
So, this would kind of qualify as a stupid Sarah Palin thing of the day. Last night, she tweeted about, I don't know, it was just sort of a rah-rah tweet.
She says, I didn't understand a word of it.
Yeah, I know, neither did I.
And really had to read it like three times to figure out what the hell she was talking about.
Is that basically independence / GOP, focus. Well, is it independence / GOP, / focus. The weakened leftist party is the PIT, is the PT.
I guess.
Yeah.
I think.
The weakened leftist party is the PT, / It allows unified effort to rein in federal government's overreach and protection and protect constitution. There's no rhyme or reason to that. That makes literally no sense whatsoever.
It allows, I don't even know what she's talking about, regardless of the fact that she spelled rain wrong.
Yes, right, that's right. I mean, that was that's the big thing. She misspelled rain. She spelled it R-E-I-G-N.
Yeah, like a king's reign.
That's right.
It's not at all what she meant. Oh my God! But I don't under it. What is the it? What is she modifying? What? Where is a verb? Wait. What is the point of the sentence? It allows. What allows? Focus. Focus allows. Whatever the fuck she's talking about.
The weakened leftist party allows it. I don't understand.
Allows
that
what? I don't. Whatsoever. I don't know. That's so totally a Palin tweet though. That did not come out of the brain trust. As Pappy O'Daniel would say, the brain trust.
Midget broom, whatnot.
That was totally one that she just pulled right out of her ass on her BlackBerry.
I'm going to try to structure this sentence here.
Yeah, can we diagram it? Can we get some Venn diagramming going on?
That's right. Independence / GOP, focus. She's telling the independents and GOP to focus.
Yes, that part makes sense. She should have just left it there.
Yeah. The weakened leftist party is the point. So I guess the weakened leftist party... The Democrats, I guess.
I guess. Whatever the leftists are. I didn't know we had any, you know, real leftists.
But that's they're the point of something. I guess to underscore that they're weak.
I think she's saying focus now because the real, in other words, stop. Maybe this is in regard to the Rovian bullshit, but maybe it's, you know, the Democrats are the point. Stop infighting. Stop bickering with each other. The Democrats are the point. I think that's what that sentence is getting at.
But somehow this allows a unified effort to rein in federal government's overreach and protect Constitution.
That I don't
get it.
That's gotta that that sentence just went. She just lost it. There. Went off the rails.
Oh, good Lord! Yeah, and then of course the big misspelling right in the middle of it.
Yeah.
You know what we didn't talk about with regards to what happened on Tuesday, mm-hmm. is this guy Carl Paladino won the Republican nomination for governor in New York. This guy is arguably the nuttiest of all the wingnuts who have come forward in the past
he
year.
He really is.
In all of these primaries.
The most dangerous. I wouldn't even say nutty. I mean, I think he's dangerous.
Yeah.
There's something seriously not right in this guy. Like, in his eyes. Like, he really looks like he would cut a bitch. I mean, I really think he has some violence in his heart.
Yeah.
And I don't know what the polling looks like. I haven't looked at the, you know, what his chances are against. I don't know what his numbers look like, but he terrifies me. I mean, really scary character. This guy will absolutely cut a bitch.
Well, if you haven't seen it yet, and this is one of those times where I'm glad we're not on TV, because then I would be forced to show these things. I would rather not. Yeah. But, I mean, he's known for having forwarded around these awful, awful, like, super mega racist Photoshops.
And porn.
Yeah.
I mean, he just has no inner censor, and those people do not belong in politics. I mean, you'd almost kind of want him to get elected just to watch the biggest flame out in gubernatorial history when you get an email from paladino.gov and it's like, hey, look at this chick, take this one. Oh, and you're like, oh, impeachment.
Right.
Enjoy.
there's
something wrong with this guy.
I mean, here was his apology for saying, I mean, these emails that he sent around, like, you know, the Obamas dressed like pimps and, mm-hmm. you know, like African-Americans being chased by an airplane or something. It was like run, N-word run or something along those lines. And then there was like a, you know, like some sort of African tribal dance going on. It was just the worst of the worst. I mean, like the worst Photoshops you can imagine. It was like going back to during the election when there was that, or during the interim period. Between the election and inauguration, where there was that thing going around with like watermelons growing on the White House lawn.
Yeah.
And so here was his apology.
It's a classic non-apology apology.
That's right. This is, I'm not a racist. Look, take my word for it. it says, I apologize to you and everyone if that is offensive.
If that
is offensive. It is clearly and obviously offensive.
It is empirically offensive.
To me, it's just humor, he says. Of course, he misspells it's, you know.
Well,
no apostrophe.
You know, at this point, we would do nothing but police this shit. Right.
But anyway, it says, to me, it's just humor. I'm not a racist and have never related Obama's color to my political distaste for him. I just feel he is a very liberal lightweight who will be unable to make. Yeah, he's a liberal lightweight. This pimp drawing, for example. What? Mm-hmm. I don't know. Doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, right. Look at how this informs my politics. Pimp.
Liberal
lightweight.
Yeah, you are a liberal
lightweight.
That's what
I think about when I look at a pimp.
That's right. Because you're a pimp, you're therefore a liberal lightweight.
Yeah. Every time I see a pimp walking down the street, I'm like, hey, look at that liberal lightweight in that audacious coat.
I also feel that Bush is an ass and will go down as the worst president in history. Now, see, that's a big, you know, that's a big cover your ass statement there. That's
see,
like
you don't hurt yourself by saying that.
No, well, I mean, what he's doing is saying, well, see, look, I criticized Bush too. Look, I just did it.
Right. I mean, there's no political downside to that. That wasn't a risk. I mean, it's not like, you know, criticizing Bush on 9/13 when his popularity was 99%. It's anybody could take a shot at Bush now.
And he says, he goes on to say, I am not sensitive to ethnic humor. Well, no shit.
Yeah.
And then he goes on, he just like lists a bunch of derogatory ethnic words here. Dago, Spick, Polak. He just starts going off.
They're all the same to me.
That's right. I'm not saying, yo.
An equal opportunity hater.
Whatever we hear the humor every day. And that is another sentence that doesn't make sense. Dago, Spick, Polak, whatever we hear the humor every day. I think the oversensitivity to black/white is wrong and in itself demeaning. Political correctness, as people choose to define it, is demeaning.
But it's not about political correctness. It's about overt racism.
Right.
And it's absolutely inappropriate, you know, widespread email distribution. I mean, somebody, and he was turned in by somebody he sent this shit to. So I got no sympathy for you, brother. Somebody that you sent it to was offended.
Right. So this is the this is the Republican nominee for governor of one of the largest states in the union.
And one of the most financially important,
exactly.
I mean, the most financially important, ultimately, and you know, 1/50th of the country's, you know, statewide ruling class. That's terrifying. This guy is just something crazy in his eyes, and he's up there, you know, beating his podium to death over power to the people and take it to the elites. And this guy's like a multimillionaire.
Yeah.
Like, where does he get this Tea Party cred? Because he's just a racist? Is that what buys him in?
Well, I mean, he's just gonna throw all of his money at Andrew Cuomo, in this race, and that's what's. I mean, I don't know that he can beat Andrew Cuomo. I have no idea, but he's going to make a really big damn go of it, and he's. He's a right-wing nut job. I mean, absolutely one of the most racist characters who we've seen pop onto the stage. And you know, I'm not going to apologize for throwing that word around either, racist, because the Republicans are trying to do to the word racist what they did to the word liberal. They're trying to remove, strip it of any definition, and make it just that again. But I mean,
because,
to me,
you know, to some extent, there is some knee jerk. There is some, I mean, in the liberal blogosphere and elsewhere, there is some overreaction.
Of course,
there and they can take those small instances, spin it up into, oh well, everything's racism with you people, and you know, demystify the word and just, you know, it's what they do. They take all the power and potency out of it. It's how they frame arguments, and they're the best. They're the best at that.
But I mean,
they suck at that.
It's I think it's happening, though, in careful moderation among the mainstream left. I mean, what drives me nuts is when people go into comment threads and pull out comment threads and discussions like that as if that's somehow a valid representation of X, Y, or Z. It's not. And if, you know, people throw around all kinds of pejoratives and exclamatory sorts of accusations and name calling in comments on the internet. That doesn't make it, you know, sort of indicative and you know, worthy of kind of labeling the whole batch. Like, I wouldn't go, you know, look, I wouldn't go to Michelle Malkin's site and just go through all of the comments and say, well, Michelle Malkin's a nut. Look at these comments. I just go to what Michelle Malkin has to say to define whether or not she's a nut and what she's saying is just absolutely wrong and backwards. But. So I don't know. I mean, the word itself, it's I think it's still valid. I still think it needs to be used when, you know, when it makes sense. And this, there's no two ways about it. This guy is a full blown racist, and he's the, you know, he represents the Republican Party. He's the nominee for governor in New York State.
But, I would say call a spade, but I think that's racist. So.
Well, I mean, look,
I can't say anything anymore.
Here's I mean, Newt Gingrich, too, you know, he is just, he's skirting a little bit of this as well. And this is something that was from over the weekend, and I feel like it was 3 weeks ago.
I know.
Another reason why we, I mean, we got to start doing this every day. But, you know, he said over the weekend, this whole thing about, you know, the president's worldview. I mean, he just basically went full birther, you know. He said, what if Obama is so outside, it's President Obama, you jackass. What if Obama is so outside our comprehension that only if you understand Kenyan anti-colonial behavior can you begin to piece together his actions, Gingrich asks. This is the most accurate predictive model for his behavior. This is a person who is fundamentally out of touch with how the world works, who happened to have played a wonderful con. So you basically combine Obama as a Kenyan and he's playing out a con, which to me references back to the whole, well, he's a secret Muslim aspect to all of this, which all runs on the periphery of, well, you know, Obama is black. Look at that black guy. He's going to give all kinds of money to welfare queens.
But Gingrich is extremely crafty. I mean, you have to, you do sort of have to go around the block to get to draw those conclusions. I mean, you can make a case for a sort of Kenyan nationalism by reading Obama's first book, you know, Dreams from My Father, about I don't think he's anti-colonial. I don't even know what that means, really, anti-colonialist.
No.
I mean, are we all just so pro-colonialism now? when did that happen? I missed that memo. Soros is really, you know, he's supposed to send me the memos with my check every month.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's so crafty in the way he puts these things together, where he's got plausible deniability on the things he's said. But it's insidious, and nothing Gingrich says when he goes on TV and elsewhere, it has any relationship to the facts on the ground about how this president comports himself politically. You know, he's the ultimate, you just can't, there's things you cannot argue with Newt Gingrich because it's just so counterfactual.
Yeah.
Where do you start? No one other than Jon Stewart, and I don't think he'll go on Jon Stewart anymore. He's been brave enough to do it, but you know, no one will call him on that stuff. You know, no one will say, like what, Newt? What are you talking about? Because we'd love to see some of this radical. The left would love to see a tenth part of the tenth part of the radicalism the right paints him with.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
where is it? Give me some radicalism.
I mean, it's remarkable to listen to some of these guys knowing what we know about the president and his positions on some of these. The president is a pragmatist. He's a center-left pragmatist, and they're painting him as being this far-left wackaloon, and it's simply not the case.
Give me some of that.
But if they make a case for that, if that's the thing, why bring in all of this? I mean, that takes me back to the birther argument, the race, what I believe is a racist birther argument. And it's the black side of this, because they want to underscore Kenyan to underscore, you know, the president's racial background.
Yeah. There's no conversation you need to have about the president that should include the word Kenyan. I mean, that's just
right.
He's the president of the United States now. Sorry. You got to find something else to call him. You just can't say Kenyan.
And how many total days did Barack Obama spend with his biological father? 2 days? I mean, did he actually see him for, I think it was just one trip, wasn't it? I mean, one time he went and visited his father and met with him, and then that was it. And then his father was killed shortly after, right?
Certainly not enough time to be imbued with some radical, you know, political philosophy from the guy. I mean, unless there's some sort of weird Kenyan mind meld that I'm not aware of,
right?
You know, where it's like Spock and Sarek, and they get a little, you know, Ponfar going or something. That might have been the wrong word. Excuse me, Star Trek fans, if I just implied that Spock and his dad were banging each other. I've had a real Star Trek theme going on lately for some reason. Plinkett put out a review on Red Letter Media
on
the new Star Trek.
I saw that.
I'll tell you what. Strip those videos of all the weirdness, you know, all the prostitute killing and the basement stuff. And those guys are the most brilliant film reviewers I've ever seen.
Yeah.
I mean, absolutely insightful, just real hardcore movie magic going on with those guys.
The episode one review, the review that they did of Star Wars episode one is easily the most incisive, insightful, just and absolutely cutting. I mean, you will never, you watch these things. You go to YouTube, you type in Red Letter Media, and you'll get a whole list of all these videos where this guy plays this character, this old man character called Mr. Plinkett.
Harry S. Plinkett.
Right. And he reviews in incredible detail. Thesis kind of detail.
Yeah.
Where it must take him, you know, months to put together this script, and it just going through and just picking apart everything. And it's not like nitpicky Star Wars geek stuff necessarily.
No, it's film, just basic storytelling, filmmaking,
film criticism. And
the greatest thing he ever said was when he's talking about how episode one opens and how ass boring it is.
It is.
And he compares it to how Star Wars opened with the blockade runner, the tiny little rebel ship, and then the massive Star Destroyer. Yeah. And he says, it's so perfect that you almost think George Lucas had to fight it to get it, you know, like they fought George Lucas to put it in. Because like George Lucas wouldn't even understand how perfect filmmaking that was. Like you almost think that George Lucas didn't want it in there. I just laughed with my teeth showing when he said that.
I mean, there are so many great, I mean, the whole thing with the contrived, I mean, my favorite part of the whole series of reviews, and it's literally 70 minutes long. It's like 10 minute. Each and this is just one. The episode. Yeah, each one. And this is just the episode one review. And the best part of it is when he's going through the, you know, where Liam Neeson is doing the bet with the flappy creature. in Tatooine,
trying to figure out what that bet is all about.
He's trying to figure out all the complexities of this betting scheme that literally takes up a good 10 minutes of the middle of the meat of this movie.
Yeah,
where Liam Neeson is scamming this flappy bird creature in Tatooine, and they're, you know, he's talking about, you know, I've got this new podcast, but it's, I mean, not a new podcast, but got a pod racer. Podcast. I've got this pod racer. I'm sounding like an old man. Yeah. I've got this pod racer. I'm going to bet you the pod racer plus these parts, and then I'm the ship on top of that. And if you, I'll go double or nothing, but you got to roll this chance cube and then, you know, fly upside down and bang your head into the ceiling. And then if you do that, then we're going to go. And we're going to, you know, bet on horses later.
And I mean, Plinkett's whole point is that Qui-Gon could have done that in 10 seconds just by cheating the guy right outright.
Yeah.
Because that's the ultimate moral lesson of it, is that Qui-Gon just ultimately cheats this guy.
That's exactly what he does.
When he could have just kicked him in the nuts and taken the part and been just as morally, approving as what he ends up doing.
That's right. I mean, he literally, just, like, in the movie, and they make a big deal about this, Plinkett does, where they roll this dice, and Qui-Gon literally uses the Force to manipulate the dice roll. I mean, he basically rigs the dice roll with the Force, which is really, you know, kind of underscores the nobility and...
Yeah, Guardians of Peace and Justice, my ass.
Right.
It's just... It's so tragic. Those whole... The prequels were just tragic.
Yeah.
Almost... I used to tell people that if the Matrix sequels, following the Matrix, if the Matrix sequels sucked, I would burn down the theater in which I was watching them. But unfortunately, I watched the first Matrix sequel, Reloaded, with the entire cast in L.A., and I could not burn down the classic, you know, Westwood theater there. I could have burned my local Cineplex down. But with, you know, seeing the sequel with Keanu in the building and Carrie Moss, and everybody, I couldn't torch that place, but I was equally disappointed with the Matrix sequels as I was the Star Wars prequels.
I've seen bits and pieces of those Matrix sequels, and I don't know.
Yeah, I'm missing. Pretend they don't exist. That's what I do.
The thing is, I didn't really love the first Matrix movie. I mean, I liked it. I mean, I enjoyed it, but it wasn't. I wasn't gaga over it. You know,
I saw it ten times in the theater.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I had nothing better to do. It was in the waning days of WorldCom when I knew I was going to get shit canned because WorldCom was, I mean, our CEO was in prison and and I was just like, you know, fuck this. I'm going to go next door and watch
You were
Matrix
on the lam and stuff, yeah.
So. Yeah. 10 times I saw that movie because I'm a huge William Gibson fan, the writer William Gibson.
Yeah.
I'm the William Gibson fan. He just has a brand new book out I want to plug called Zero History. Go get that. And The Matrix is really the first movie. Johnny Mnemonic was a William Gibson short story.
Oh, right, right.
And Keanu was in that and fucked it all up. And I just wasn't a fan of the movie because the short story was so brilliant. But The Matrix just really felt like the first William Gibson film. Like, even though he had nothing to do with it, they ripped it off completely. I mean, William Gibson coined the term cyberspace, and he called cyberspace the Matrix in all of his early books. So they totally ripped him off. But it was really the first movie to capture the sort of William Gibson vibe. That's why I loved it so much.
Well, the new Plinkett video is the J.J. Abrams reboot of Star Trek, which Plinkett actually likes.
He did like it, and his criticisms were on spot. You know, they were absolutely correct. But again, just a brilliant. You know, I don't know who it is that does it. I don't know if it's the whole Red Letter Media team that does the script, and then they have just one of their guys do the voiceover thing. But they're just brilliant film critics, just really insightful guys.
Yeah, I really think I think it's really just like one guy who does all of it, which is indicative of the internet post recession. Speaking of which, you know, I heard about Etsy. Etsy has like 60 different engineers working behind the scenes. Someone didn't get the memo about, you know, recessions and cutting back. 60 engineers running that site.
Wow.
Of course, you could find Bubble Genius at Etsy.com. That's bubblegenius.etsy.com. Pure products, pure genius, Bubble Genius. They're giving away free soap to people who email them a photo on Election Day with their I voted sticker. Of course, one soap per person, so you can't go vote multiple times like I used to do in the olden days. and get multiple I voted stickers and then go and send multiple pictures to Bubble Genius and scam them on their free soap promotion for Election Day.
Something tells me the standard Bubble Genius customer would not be the scam them out of soap type. Just like on Twitter, the Dalai Lama has a Twitter account and it's verified. And I'm thinking, what fuckhole would pretend to be the Dalai Lama on Twitter?
Right.
You know? Who is that jack?
There's got to be someone, though.
Well, yeah, for mocking purposes. But yeah. I just think it's funny that that somebody in Nepal had to send a fax to Twitter to verify the Dalai Lama. I just think that's hilarious. That's really, you know, technology's colliding.
Bubble Genius brings you soap and body products like you've never, ever, ever, ever seen before. They've got something for everyone, from guys to girls to kitties to expectant mothers and even your best friend, your doggy.
Yeah, oh, and I have to send a shout-out. They sent me some perfume and mouthwash and stuff for my stinking dog, so.
Oh, crap on a stick. You know what? I've got a box sitting here from Bubble Genius that I did not open.
Oh.
So I don't know what they sent me. I'm sure I'll just talk about it next week. Pure products, pure genius. It's Bubble Genius, and you absolutely support your liberal, independent business.
Yes.
And of course, that's all of our sponsors here on the Bob and Ella Show.
Of course,
are indie and progressive. So help them out. Also, put in your promo code Bob and Elvis. Get 15% off your entire order at Bubble Genius.
Shove Bob and Elvis into your pants and haul them around with you wherever you go. Subscribe to the Bob and Elvis Show in the podcast section on iTunes.
Yes,
do
indeed.
It.
Yeah, absolutely. Please do. We need more iTunes listeners. By the way, this segment of the Bob and Elvis Show brought to you by Dusty Dog Vintage. Stylish women's vintage clothing and accessories along with Mad Men throwback cool for the guys. Shop Dusty Dog Vintage on Etsy at www.dustydogvintage.com. Speaking of Mad Men, did you see this week's Mad Men episode?
No, I'm way behind. I think I got like a season and a half built up on my TiVo.
Well, I don't want to spoil the actual content of the story for you, but there was one great moment that I just want to mention, and there was a B plot where Joan is getting basically sexually harassed around the office, where the guys in the bullpen are, kind of ranking on her for her voluptuous appearance and what she does, and insist that she's just a glorified secretary, yada, yada, yada. And she goes in there, guns blazing.
Nice.
And they're all sitting there, hovered around this coffee table, drinking, of course. And she just says, well, I'm looking forward to when you guys are all in the jungles of Vietnam getting, shot at. By the
nice.
She just paints this whole picture of these four jagoffs, in the shit in Vietnam, within inches of their lives, just scared. And then they just blanch. They just go white faced, and then she just turns and walks off. So it's just
as most men when presented with a strong, female, they blanch.
And
even
of course,
today.
Right. And for her, it's, her husband, whose, character name I forget, her husband's going off to Vietnam in the show. Right. So, and he hasn't left yet. He's about to leave. In this week's episode, he's about to leave for boot camp.
Oh, I caught that Laura Linney show. and saw just enough of that douchebag liberal guy to despise that show for the rest of my life.
Yeah, I stopped watching it.
He was in a dumpster when I saw him.
Oh, yes.
His girlfriend, who works at Whole Foods, comes, and I almost vomited on my television.
Yeah.
It was so annoying.
Yep.
That prick liberal guy. I don't know who, because you would think the scriptwriters would be, you know, slightly liberal bent themselves. I don't know who these people are, but they should go to hell.
I mean, why didn't they? I mean, they should just have a puppet playing that character. They should have like a,
right, huh?
Like a Henson. Here's a Jim Henson puppet living in the dumpster, playing like the most beyond Saturday Night Live satirical liberal character.
Yeah, just call it Lefty the Liberal. You know, right. Make it a left-handed puppet.
Uh-huh.
Have him wearing a Che Guevara's t-shirt,
Birkenstocks.
Hi, I'm Lefty the Liberal. You can just point at it and laugh and go, oh, it's the part where Laura Linney talks to a puppet.
Yeah. And that's exactly, I mean, if you haven't seen the show, The Big C on Showtime, that's, I mean, it's a story, and Laura Linney is a fantastic actor, and the premise is interesting, and you want to learn more about what it's like for this woman to deal with, you know, having terminal melanoma, and you want to experience
just isn't
that.
Very good.
Yeah, but I mean, so it's like this, I mean, it's playing out like how she's coping with all of this and keeping it secret from her family, for, you know, Oliver Platt's in it and her son, but then suddenly the whole thing will come to a screeching stop. I mean, the whole show will entirely stop, and she will suddenly show up at her brother's dumpster or whatever, and he lives in a dumpster. I mean, we're not making that up. I mean,
he's in, so green, he lives in a dumpster.
That's right. And like, it's like Big Bird going to visit Oscar the Grouch. I mean, it's really literally that.
Yeah.
And it so takes you out of the rest of the show that it becomes unwatchable, because you never know. I sit there and I no longer trust the show.
Right.
I like shows that you can trust the writers and you can trust the performers, that they're going to take you through this sequence of events and it's not going to be jarring or upsetting. And this is both, because it just completely, oh my God, I can't watch this anymore, because that guy is going to show up. Oscar the Birkenstock is going to show up in his dumpster bitching about, like, making a noose, like fashioning a noose out of plastic grocery store bags, because he hates the plastic grocery store bags.
The episode I watched, she's at like she goes to a support group, and they all, and it was so, it felt like that scene in Fight Club where he's, you know, trolling the various support groups. It just felt so rehashed and something I'd seen a million times, where the fish out of water goes to a support group and meets a wackaloon, you know, who is so touchy feely about his cancer or whatever. It's like, oh wow, I've never seen that before.
Yeah,
I couldn't go down to my local rec center and see that.
Right.
It just did absolutely nothing interesting. So I'm just waiting, biding my time for Dexter. That's all.
Yeah, Dexter.
All I care about. America's Got Talent is over now. That was me and Peanut's thing all season. America's Got Talent. So that Michael Grimm won. Kudos to Michael Grimm.
Yeah.
All I care about now is Dexter.
Well, Mad Men's winding down. I mean, the other show that I watched religiously is Anthony Bourdain, which I really enjoy. And that, I think, yeah, that's like a sporadic show. I mean, that just never goes away. But you know what it's the final season of? Little People, Big World.
I've never heard of that in my life.
You've never heard of that? The Roloffs? You've never heard of the Roloffs?
What are you talking about?
It's on TLC. It's that dwarf family in Oregon. They live on a pumpkin farm.
You're making that up. There's not a show on TLC about dwarves living on a pumpkin farm.
Yes, there is.
No,
and it's called Little People, Big World.
You're surprised that I haven't heard of this?
What? It's been on for six seasons. It's been on since like 2005.
Get the fuck out of here.
No, absolutely.
I don't watch TLC. I haven't watched TLC since it became the Vagina Channel. I mean, it's basically
right.
Every show is a camera up some critical, horrible pregnancy gone wrong birth canal. And I just, when pre-Peanut, I was really interested in that stuff because I panicked about every little detail of Peanut's assembly, you know, her biological progression. And I was watching all of those shows to the point where I was a disaster.
Yeah.
And now, post-Peanut, I cannot look at any more birth canal complications. I can't do it.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think what's most offensive is seeing, you know, families with 20 kids hogging up way too many limited resources for themselves.
Those people can go fuck themselves. Yeah. Those 18 and 20 kid having people. The I don't Duggars, understand that.
Yeah, yeah.
This is not Quaker Pennsylvania in 1812. I mean, I don't know what you're doing unless you have a farm. And I don't think these people do. No. They're not breeding farmhands, right? Because that used to be the point. You didn't really live in a town or anything. You just needed to populate your farmhands.
That's
you
know, right.
Like egg pickers.
Yeah.
I don't think that's what these people are doing. They're mostly Christianist, insane people.
Yeah.
And like, there's one family that names them all J names.
Right.
Like they're all they're 18 kids and they're all Jonah, James, Jenny, Jebba. It's what are you doing?
Yeah. I mean, they're actually farming children there. I mean, they're dropping these things like cabbage heads as they go, the Duggars. And yeah, I mean, that's just one of the shows on TLC, but the, I mean, they've got, there's two dwarf shows on TLC. There's Little People,
there
Big World, and then there's the
dwarf shows.
There's the Little Couple, I think it's called, the Littlest Couple, and they make cakes or pies. I don't know what the hell they do, but.
Are they Oompa Loompas?
I don't know. No, I think they have a business, but I mean, what's funny about the roll-offs is they live on this pumpkin farm and they are like insanely wealthy. I mean, every episode, they must have 20 cars. Every episode, like Matt Roloff. No, the dad and the mom are dwarves, and they've got three average size kids and one dwarf child. And the dwarf child is a twin of one of the average size kids. So there are three dwarves.
Their last name isn't Barnum or Bailey.
No, it's Roloff, and like Matt Roloff, and they literally do. They sell pumpkins every October for Halloween,
yeah.
And then he's got like 20
That's a
different
business out here, by the way.
20 different That's businesses. Yeah, business. I mean he's just like they sell he manufactures step stools that he distributes to hotels.
Of course,
you know, so you can have like these dwarf kits for a hotel room if you have a dwarf or a little person. Customer at a hotel, you can give them this step stool that they can whatever. So
man, why didn't we think of that? That's an untapped market.
It absolutely is.
Supplying hotel chains with dwarf kits.
Right. And like these grabbers that you can grab the coat hangers off of the rack.
Oh, like the little mechanical hands with the little claw on them.
Yep.
Well, maybe we should do something for abnormally tall people. We could sell them like hats, padded helmets so they don't bump their heads on hotel ceilings.
Absolutely.
Hmm.
I could use one of those.
You need to think about that.
But you know what? Going back to movies for a second, I don't know if you saw this thing. This has been cracking me up. It's strangely gay, and it's about these three sort of up and coming Republicans in Congress. Of course, Eric Cantor, Paul Ryan, and one other guy. And they're collectively joining up as who's the other guy? Oh, Kevin McCarthy.
Oh, Lord.
Kevin McCarthy is the other congressman.
Yeah.
And
were they on the Today Show the other day pitching this?
They might have been, but they're calling themselves the Young Guns.
Oh, barf!
Listen to this thing. And they made a movie trailer for their little He-Man Woman Haters Club or whatever they're. Their little man club. It's so funny.
America is at a crossroads, and Washington remains out of touch.
The economy is not creating enough jobs.
The bill is passed.
Now, see, there's my first objection right there. It's just Nancy Pelosi saying the bill is passed, and this is somehow objectionable. I mean, we know what it is. It's the health care reform bill, but it's presented here out of context. So it just looks like, oh, here's Nancy Pelosi passing a bill.
I mean, the Democrats kill jobs bill.
That's right.
Woohoo! We passed that one.
If you don't watch C-SPAN, you have no idea what this is. So you got to go, oh, Nancy Pelosi passed a bill. That's not awful. Why are they complaining about that? That's actually pretty good. Thank you, Nancy. And everyone's cheering,
Millions of voices ignored.
This is my town hall meeting, and I set the rules, and I've had these rules.
Ironically, that is a Mike Castle town hall meeting.
You wouldn't let anybody speak.
There is a better way.
I mean, you got to see this. This is like Hollywood style promotion.
They've got the Hollywood voiceover guy.
Yeah. I mean, with the big...
That's the In a World guy.
Lens flares and... I mean, talk about J.J. Abrams. I mean, it's like loaded with lens flares. And this, you know, this big sort of blocky text that kind of, you know, pushes in into the screen. And
a new team is ready to bring America back.
And here they are with Eric their hands. Cantor, Eric Cantor.
Kevin McCarthy. Paul Ryan. Joined by common sense conservative candidates from across the country. Together, they are ready to make history. Together, they are the Young Guns. Energetic, forging new solutions. One book will outline a vision to restore America's prosperity.
The Young Guns.
Young Guns, a new generation of conservative leaders.
Big lens flare at the end. Holy crap.
The gayest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah, I mean, it's like the three of them walking towards the camera wearing their regular
dungarees.
Sort of their shirts without the tie and just walking valiantly towards the camera. It was like the right stuff. And then as they get closer to the camera, this is Eric Cantor, Paul Ryan, who looks like Eddie Munster, and then this other guy, Kevin McCarthy. And then it blurs out of this big lens flare.
Wow.
And that's it. But I mean, you know, of course you can't help but to think of the you know, the stupid movie from the 80s, right? And that's the Young Guns. And what's remarkable about this is, again, they're really trying to, I think, frame Paul Ryan and Eric Cantor and these guys as being, you know, like the very serious wing of the Republican Party. Like, we're not nutty like those teabaggers, but...
But yet, common sense conservative, that's a Sarah Palin dog was doing.
Yeah.
So it's very strange. I don't know. I guess we'll have to wait for the next episode where they all shower together in the congressional, you know, men's room.
Well, the thing I like to underscore whenever possible about, you know, and specifically...
Underscore. Sorry. That's a gay word. Underscore.
Really? Oh, shit. Sorry.
That had all kinds of connotation there.
I'm auditioning for the Young Guns.
wasn't there? I mean, all those 80s movies were just so quietly... homoerotic, like Top Gun.
There's no
gayer movie on earth than Top Gun. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
No.
Like Young Guns and Top Gun, anything with the word gun in it, really, I think, was just very quietly homoerotic.
Yeah.
All of those Brat Pack guys just look like they wanted each other pretty hard.
Yeah, absolutely.
And there's nothing gayer ever than the volleyball scene in Top Gun. Just had to throw that out.
It really,
and
really
I
is.
I enjoyed it for that reason.
Almost.
I love some good 80s homoeroticism set to Take My Breath Away by whatever.
Speaking of things that take you out of a movie, you know what was really weirdly homoerotic? You ever seen American History X with Edward Norton? There's a slow motion basketball scene in that movie that is very gay, and it just yanks you right out of the storytelling. It's not because it's gay, it's just so unusual because it's
out
like
of place in the movie.
Exactly. It's like slow, and literally they film this you know, it's at 60 frames a second or whatever, just when it plays back looking like it's slower. So it's like this slow motion, like Edward Norton with his shirt off and the big Nazi tattoo leaping up and like doing layups. You know, it's just so odd.
Sorry. Anyway. I was just zoning out there.
Was I too vivid with my description of Edward Norton?
On, where's my bubble genius?
His mighty pectoral muscles.
That was a great movie, though. Great script. And great,
yeah.
Really, Edward Norton's first big come out role, you know, first big breakout.
You know, it was an Alan Smithy film.
Was it?
Yeah. That was Alan Smithy is a sort of a Hollywood pseudonym when the filmmakers don't want to take credit for their work.
Right. Right, or they're, you know, run off the set by something.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, holy crap. We're almost out of time. But I wanted to play this thing. You know, Paul Ryan is not the very serious guy that, you know, he's trying to frame himself at. He's just another Glenn Beck acolyte. I mean, he's been on the Glenn Beck show conversing with Glenn Beck about how progressivism is a cancer.
Yeah. But he's got this fiscal package that comparatively makes him, I mean, he's a sane conservative compared to everyone else, because he has this bullshit fiscal package that doesn't really work when it's analyzed correctly. But at least he's somebody saying something.
Yeah.
which is, you know, all he's got.
Which specifically is, I'm going to privatize Social Security. It's such a great idea because nothing wrong will ever happen with the, you know, with Wall Street.
Right.
But they're very serious. They're the young guns. And you know what? Speaking of which, you know what we didn't get to? Let's talk about this real quick. By way of a kicker. Andrew Breitbart admitted to tricking everyone. Did you see that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He said, I mean, he basically came right out and said, oh, yeah, the Acorn videos, bullshit.
Fooled you.
Just doing that to get attention. He said, He said in a speech, I believe it was over the weekend, so I'm going to have to stage a series of tricks to get the mainstream media to have to pay attention to it. So that's what I did. I admit it. I tricked you. Oh my God! So now,
meanwhile, that whole organization is out of business. So good job.
Yeah, good job, good job. And then, of course,
trick
we know
or treat, Acorn.
Right. I mean, we know that Shirley Sherrod was the sequel to that, and arguably also a trick, which he didn't specifically admit to, but 2 and 2 equals 4.
Stays.
Well, thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. Take care of yourselves out there. You fudge with us, you fudge with the best. We shall be back next week. Oh, yeah, by the way, once again, Bob and Elvis Show brought to you by Pomegranate Journeys at pomegranate.travel. Just your actual, like, the dream vacation. If you can imagine your dream vacation, this would be it. And of course, Bubble Genius at bubblegenius.etsy.com. Take care, everybody. See you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.